Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now then, so Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent is here in the studio. He departs for Japan on...
Friday.
Okay. You wrote of the Wales performance. For the first time since 2018, Joe Schmidt's team looked physically dominant, fully coherent, and capable of mixing it with the world's best. Maybe they've got their timing right after all, which is a very hopeful note. Mm. And they did. They looked like they were starting to come right at the right time from a physical point of view, which is, I guess, in the several steps to doing well at this competition is kind of point number one.
Yeah. And it's what we've all, I think, hoped was going on through the 2018 Six Nations when they looked underpowered, looked way off it, got bullied. Then came back this summer and got bullied again. And, you know, I think it tested everyone's faith a little bit. And even would have tested, you know, they even to use Joe Schmidt's own language, you know, when he said they were a bit broken, tested their own fate in their own process a little bit. But slowly but surely, over the course of these 3 weeks, I mean, it's a real short window, this kind of, you know, bust to boom of Twickenham through that game in Cardiff, where it was by no means perfect, but there was signs that suddenly the conditioning, you know, was paying off. That, yeah, Dave Kilcoyne in particular was suddenly this super athlete who was throwing Welsh lads around. And then up to Saturday, where the big guns in particular looked back to themselves, looked like they'd almost been waiting for this moment to kick into gear, that, you know, everything that happened beforehand. And Schmidt has said this a number of times, that they kind of sacked off the Six Nations in the best possible way, especially after England, that he decided to rotate, to try different things. But it didn't look great even when he was doing it. He'd expect a bit more. But on Saturday, against a Welsh team that was featuring a couple of... It was a little bit more experimental than Ireland, but it was still their last game as well. Still captained by Adam Wynne-Jones. Still full of familiar faces. A Welsh team that had pretty much bullied Ireland in March. You couldn't... if you're going to criticise them heavily after Twickenham, you've got to give them a bit of credit for what they've done in 2 weeks since. And, you know, I'm not saying they're going to go and beat New Zealand or South Africa straight away, but I give them a chance against any team in the world right now, particularly if they keep building incrementally through the weeks, over, you know, and they make the most of the schedule that, as long as they get through that Scotland and Japan games in the first 6 days, is quite kind to them.
You know, it's funny. It's rare that expectation feels about right for a team. Yeah. Certainly an Irish rugby team going to a World Cup. It's often inflated or we're a bit doom and gloom. It feels about right, you would say.
I think it feels a bit low.
Goings and the goings. Do you even a bit?
Yeah,
low?
I think we're a bit. I think
in a nice way,
which is
low,
probably
maybe
a way that players, that, you know, I think the, you know, players' management will probably thank the fans for. But you know, they're. I know the world rankings are a negligible barometer at the best of times, but it just shows over the 4 years the body of work they've put in has been really, really exceptional.
Yeah.
They have built a squad that really is quite deep in every position across the 31. Yes, there are concerns over Keith Earls' knee, Joey Carberry's ankle. You know, Sexton, for all that, he was excellent on Saturday and will be excellent whenever he puts on the jersey, bar the odd hiccup here and there. He's one injury away from disaster. There's always this, you know, there's a brittleness there to a couple of players that they won't like us saying it, but, you know, with the evidence is unfortunately there. But if you look at the body of work, if you look at the fact that they were so good in 2018, that even through the disaster that we thought the Six Nations was, they were able to beat Scotland, Italy and France pretty comprehensively and arrive at this point as the world's number one team. You know, they've beaten every rival that they've come across over the 4 years. They've done pretty much everything you'd expect them to do. There's still little question marks, you know, the ones that Andy Dunn would repeatedly raise in here, and I agree with him in a lot of them, but even the stuff that Gatland flagged, that maybe they're a little bit unambitious in their attacking game, and maybe that's what will let them down when they come up against an equal rival. But Joe Schmidt has singularly focused on this tournament since they went out against Argentina 4 years ago. He's done everything he feels he's taken all the steps he feels were the right steps to address over the 4 year cycle. He's put in place the staff behind it, brought in Andy Farrell, little things across the way, and I don't think Ireland have ever been in a better place going to a World Cup.
Okay, well then actually, before we say whether expectations are high or low, are we agreed that the general expectation is Ireland will get to a quarterfinal, give it a good rattle, and probably on current feeling just come up a touch short, most likely? That is,
I'd say they're 60-40 against in a quarterfinal against either of those opposition, and that's just because of the weight of history, the form.
And is that not about right?
No, I Yes, but I think that they possibly deserve a bit more faith.
Okay.
They maybe, you know, 50-50 maybe is what they... I think they would say, like, you know, Joe Schmidt has repeatedly said it's a game of fine margins over the 6.5 years. I've heard it so many times. And it is. I mean, if the refereeing decision goes their way in that game, it goes, you know, that could turn it in their favour. If they get the start, if they get 3-6-9 and ahead, suddenly they're a different team. If it's New Zealand who get ahead of them and they start chasing New Zealand, well, then they're in trouble. So, you know, obviously we're getting ahead a little bit, but I think it is. I'm pretty, you know, I'd be shocked if they don't get to a quarter final. We know who it's going to be against. We'll know. I think real advantage is we'll know definitively who it will be against after the first Saturday of the World Cup, because they play each other, and then we'll then have the focus of the whole thing will be on that team, and, you know, Schmidt will put all of his resources,
yes.
which he's already been doing. I mean, it's been pretty clear from his own talk, you know, that he has been focusing in on that as well as minding his own house for the stuff before.
I suppose the flip side is they'll also have a good idea who.
Yeah, who wins Ireland, Scotland. I mean, Japan, and even I'd say Samoa could do a little bit of damage over the course of the pool, but the yeah, they'll know as well. So both teams will be well aware. It'll be they're both at the physical peak. They'll come into the game, you know, on the back of a good pool, because they'll even if South Africa lose to New Zealand or vice versa, they'll have built through three more games against pretty poor opposition. They'll all be in good condition, you'd hope. There won't be any five players dropping. So it's basically the best of the best. And if they lose that game and they give it their all, they'll walk away really disappointed, having not achieved what they want to set out. Because even Schmidt said, even though he says he doesn't do goals, he said we need a semi-final.
Yeah.
No one is talking about that being a good enough result, but it's the toughest quarterfinal Ireland have ever had. So there is a realistic thing that any of those teams, I think there's six or seven teams that go out there into the field on a given day. It's really all about that performance on that day. It's not, you couldn't definitively say one is better than the other over the course of the whole thing. So it's going to be tough, but it's definitely within their gift to reach semi-final. And if they get to a semi-final, well, then there's no, like, if they beat one of those teams in a quarterfinal, then they, you know, they won't fear anyone.
No, you're a totally different proposition then.
Yeah.
Sexton was on the show earlier on, and it was interesting when, look, he's, I deliberately didn't get too much into what's going to happen, what are you going to do about the World Cup, because frankly, he can't answer any of those questions. He's just going to be in the defensive. But it was interesting when we brought up with him, Ireland have struggled against the power game. Like, that's been the story of 2019 in some respects, Saracens, England at the Six Nations and so on. So when we lose collisions as a team, it can look a bit stagnant and we run out of ideas quite quickly. Is that fair? Is that too simple? Is that something you're conscious of? And he kind of, in so much as he could, he acknowledged that is a point, and he said, that is what we've been working on. And he said, hopefully you'll see it.
Yeah.
And then Joe Schmidt, interestingly, he was asked about Rob Kearney here. But talk, you know, you don't have to read much between the lines. So this was a question about Rob Kearney. And to be fair, he said Rob Kearney always plays well in big games. But then he dropped this in. He said, the game we lost here in the Six Nations against England, Rob wasn't playing and we were experimenting. We experimented a bit during the Six Nations. We wouldn't normally do that. We'd won 3 of 5. We need a semi-final in the World Cup. So, you know, you put little snippets together here and there, and it would strengthen the argument. I mean, there are no guarantees, but it would strengthen the argument that we might see more from Ireland in Japan, and that has been the aim or the plan from early enough on in this calendar year.
And I don't think the aim and the plan ever encapsulated losing so heavily to England twice.
No.
Or, and I don't think they would even, I mean, Schmidt actually said, as part of that was in the little huddle that we do afterwards, that his next line was, we need a semi-final, which again, he brought up himself. It wasn't like we pressed him on it.
Right.
But he also said that the players deserved the flak they received against England. And I think they're wearing it a little bit, which is possibly, you know, I'm not going to say that the England game was, you know, we'll look back at it as a positive. I think it was nothing but negative to lose a record score to your greatest rivals. But I do think it clarified a few things for Schmidt, and it maybe gave the players a bit of a wake-up call at the right time. But there is that sense that the Six Nations was used as a platform for the World Cup. They didn't invest everything into winning it in the same way that they had a year previously. As Schmidt said, he's won 3 of 5. So, but I think that what Sexton said was very, very interesting in terms of the strategies that they're developing to try and negate the opposition line speed. And coming around the corner, which is what Gatland criticised them for at the weekend, well, that's one of the things you do. If you remember the first Lions test between New Zealand and the Lions, everything was about Andy Farrell's line speed. The All Blacks basically just took it out of the game because they just kept coming around the corner, won those collisions, and then they sent their big centres up. So that's what Ireland were doing at the weekend, I think. And the concern I would have about those strategies, because we haven't seen an awful lot of them in these games. I mean, we saw some stuff against Italy we haven't seen since. England was right off, although in the first 5 minutes they really attacked for all 15 a lot. But at the weekend it was Sexton and Kearney who were in the backfield, and you know, brilliant players and long-serving internationals that they are. You don't want your 33-year-old and 34-year-olds counter-attacking. Like, you know, you want Larmour and Earls in that position if that's what your game is going to be. But the thing about Schmidt is, and he gets, we hear about people criticising plan Bs and all that sort of thing. I think there's about 60 different plans. There's about, he's a massive menu of games, and he changes it up. There's obviously the core fundamentals that we see on a week-to-week basis, but he does change an awful lot. And opposition coaches would laugh at the idea that Ireland are predictable to play against, but they do. It all is based on physicality, and if you lose the collisions like they did against England, it goes out the window. So what Sexton said about the fact that they're working on strategies and ways of negating that physicality and working around it, we might, I'd say, if you revisit the Leinster-Saracens game, you might see a bit of that in terms of how Leinster approached that first 50 minutes when, if they'd gotten ahead, they probably wouldn't have been dominated in the same way in the last, because Saracens are brilliant front runners in the last 10 or 15 minutes. So I just hope that they're, I suppose the thing is they're playing Scotland and Japan first, who are not physically threatening. And maybe we'll see a bit of that game plan against Russia and Samoa, who are big teams, albeit limited teams. So we'll see them try and move into that. It's a very short window to try and change things.
It's putting a lot of trust in training, getting you up to speed for implementing it in a match.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the great unknown. And the fear is that they'll go in against South Africa and try and bully them in the way that they bullied Wales on Saturday, and they'll run into the, I think everyone's seen the picture of them all with their top off at this stage, you know, you run into those mountains of men and they'll just knock you back and knock you back and knock you back, and you lose your lineup ball, and suddenly everything goes to pot, and that's your quarter final gone. So
well, then we'll see what the strategy might be, if there is one, if there's a way.
Well, that's
it.
I think we'll see that through the pool stage. I think he'll use the pool, not being arrogant, I think he'll use the pool, he'll beat Scotland playing the way he wants to play, and then he'll use those three games to build, because it's almost like a second pre-season.
Okay. Some other points from Saturday then. So we're agreed physically, there's no crisis. The team looked to be moving in the right
direction. We don't know what Wales were at. Like, we don't know if Wales were below the pitch that they're at. So, I mean,
just
there is always that.
With Twickenham, though.
Oh, it looked so much better than everything we've seen this year.
So other points. In the back row, Eddie O'Sullivan on TV was saying he thinks now the back row will be, for instance, Conan at 8, Van der Fleer at 7, and O'Mahony at 6. He wants O'Mahony there, not least as a third line-out jumper. CJ Standard was at 6 on Saturday. Is that the last area where there's a bit of debate over how that's going
to
go?
To me, it is. I think the centres nailed themselves down at the weekend, certainly for the first game, and Gary Ringo's now has a challenge to get in for, say, a quarter-final later on. Everywhere else, it just looks very settled. Henderson comes into the second row, in my opinion. I don't think Klein did enough. But the back row...
So weigh that up. What are the options here?
The back row options are O'Mahony 6, Standard 6, O'Mahony 7, Conan 8. O'Mahony 6, Van der Fleer 7, Conan, or Standard 8, which is basically being the first choice for the New Zealand game, for England the first game of the Six Nations, for Twickenham, and I think was in his head the first choice coming into the World Cup. Then you can either swap O'Mahony and Standard and leave Standard out of the team, bring him in, and he sort of comes off the bench and he's outstanding at the weekend, and he suddenly presents himself as an option, because the other thing that he's looked at is moving O'Mahony to 7. I think for South Africa, it's a very different proposition. I think for Scotland, you will have Josh Van der Fleer there because he's wonderfully athletic, a brilliant tackler, doesn't miss a shot. I mean, his tackle stats, he's not the most powerful player in terms of, you know, those big collisions, those dominant tackles that we heard about in Six Nations. But if you've got Darcy Graham cutting through the, you know, through the space, you know, really light on his feet, even Finn Russell, all these players, you want Josh because he'll go low and he'll nail that tackle. So then you're faced with, I think it's Standard or Conan for the first game, because I think O'Mahony's too important to the lineout. And I don't know, I've been Jack Conan plus two all the way through the last year. I think he's been brilliant. But the way Standard played at the weekend, and I think the ankle injury that Conan suffered in pre-season is holding him back a little bit. I'm just not sure if he's done enough to dislodge Standard. I think he could, again, keep pushing him throughout. And I think even within the 6 days, he might rejig it for Japan on you know, the following Saturday. So I think we'll see changes in the back row and the centre between those two games. So there is probably a plan in place for those four games anyway. But I do think that the back row that he came into this thinking he was going to go with, I think he'll possibly fall back on it. But I'm not convinced at all in my own thoughts on that. I think there's probably stuff that will happen in training that will inform that as well.
You're now the second person in 2 days who's told me the preferred centre partnership is Aki and Henshaw after the weekend. Ronan O'Gara was on yesterday, and he said, on balance, if he had to pick his two from four, he wasn't saying what Joe Schmidt would do, he doesn't know, but he said if he had to pick his two, it would be Aki and Henshaw. I find this quite the turnaround from even as recently as the Six Nations, where one of the great cliches was, well, Gary Ringrose's and another is how this is. He's the best defensive reader. He's absolutely locked in there. That is a pretty quick turn in for the World Cup. And it's not like he's done anything wrong either.
I wouldn't think his form has been great. I think Six Nations possibly did him a bit of damage. I think he was, you know, look, Gary Ringrose, excellent player as he is. I think the collision stuff probably counted against him. Henshaw and Aki is just a more formidable physical unit as a pair. They know each other really well from Connacht. Aki, he was terrible in Twickenham, but he's bounced back in a really, really good way. And he's one of those players that I'm thinking of that really seems to have taken the bit of, you know, someone lit a rocket under him, and suddenly he's looking, just even physically, he looks so trim. Mm. They all look leaner. They all seem to have done whatever work that they've done. They look incredible, Nick.
He shaved, of course, as well.
Well, you know, him and Jacob Stockdale's haircut. I think Ringrose, if you go back to the Champions Cup final, you know, the decision not to pass that ball, I know it's a micro moment, and I did an interview with him recently, and he spoke about it, and he said, if I had it back, I'd always give that pass. But you know, that was a chance for Leinster to put distance against Saracens. You know, there are the moments that World Cup quarter final that you'll go back on. Gary misses a lot of tackles, although he's a very good defender. He does tend to have quite high tackle miss stats. Robbie, I think, is probably a more effective tackler. I'm not sure if he's a more intelligent defender in the 13 channel. But I think Henshaw is a really important player that we've almost not forgotten about. But because he's had so many injuries and he struggled to put games back to back over the course of the last 2 years, really, since the last World Cup. We've almost forgotten how reliable he is and how big a player he is for Ireland. I mean, in that last World Cup, in that France game, he was outstanding. Mm. So he has World Cup experience. And again, I think that combination will change as the pool goes on. Maybe against Japan, a smaller, lighter team, you pick Ringrose, and they're really good on the wings. Yeah. So maybe he's the better edge defender. Whereas against Scotland, you want to rush up and cut off those Finn Russell passes, so you pick Henshaw.
And interestingly, O'Gara said yesterday, as we, you know, over the last 12 months have really settled into this rush defence, we being rugby generally, defensive reads and that real strength of Ringrose, you know, on a drift defence and spotting when to go and when not to go, that becomes less of an asset because, frankly, in a rush defence, everyone's just shooting up. So some of the thought is maybe taken out of it.
Yeah.
And that was one of his assets. That was one of the pieces of logic from O'Gara.
I don't think Ireland would be weakened significantly if Gary started. I just think on current form, looking at the way they're playing, I mean, even the fact that Ringrose has been moved. I think he's played in all four World Cup games. He's played on the wing and he's been around, and even Schmidt started talking about him playing 10 at one stage. So, like, I think that's probably hard. I think he's been lined up for that number 23 spot. So I think he could be used as, you know, someone to come to you, bish, bash, bosh through the two other lads, and then you bring on Ringrose and you've got a bit more creativity, which is not a bad way of using him at all either. You know, we've been wondering how he's going to get these three players into the team. And like Aki, a lot of people, when they were talking about what you were talking about earlier with Ringrose, it was almost automatically Henshaw and Ringrose. Whereas Bundy Aki's been 12 every time Joe Schmidt has had a chance to pick him. And he's, apart from Twickenham, he has been an outstanding player for Ireland. And he gives us that physical power that we don't have because of his makeup, his strength, his natural strength that he has. So that is something that I think you can be very quick to dismiss, but it's really important.
And he's been the only one of the four who's basically been fit
he's
the
very
whole
robust.
Time. You know?
Yeah.
And you can't underestimate, I'm trusting the guy who I know is going to be fit.
Yeah.
It's worth saying for people who didn't catch the game and they're wondering about the line-out. I'm sure there were a few groans in the crowd when the first two didn't go Ireland's way. Maybe no bad thing because it allowed them to troubleshoot and stay calm and sort this thing out. Like if it was going to disintegrate around them and if it was that fragile, it might have happened then. But they got it together. They won 5 from 5 in the second half. So, you know, that's kind of a passable effort, isn't it?
Yeah, it meant that they had to defend for pretty much the first 30 minutes and their defence was really, really exceptional and kept them in the game. Mm. It wasn't on Rory Best. I think it was a combination of James Ryan's calling and the problem of picking John Klein in the second row is that he's just not as quick off the ground as other second rows. He got beaten for the first one. CJ, again, I don't know why you'd ever call it CJ. He's probably the heaviest of your back row forwards. Maybe that was the idea was that he was, you know, it was almost a double bluff. But James Ryan, I think he called the decks 2, maybe 3 on himself and won them and managed his way through it. And it was a big confidence builder for him. And for all that it wasn't on Best, it would have definitely been in his mind when he lined up that third one because he knows that the focus does come on him if things go wrong and he's under scrutiny anyway, especially on his final international day that he really wanted to go well. So again, after two, when they were had like 10% possession and were just being forced to tackle, it looked like this could be a real storyline over the course of the day, because it didn't look good in any way. They managed their way through it through their defence, being really, really good. Best won a turnover on the ground, and eventually they got their third line out. They won it, and there was a bit of calm through the team. And Ryan called his way through it really well. Some really intelligent calls. Didn't do what Ian Henderson did the week before, which I think was the logical thing to do, but he went basically two over and over and over again. The one time he went a bit further back, he got picked off. But I think if you're picking Klein, you have to pick Omani, because Omani's a better line-up forward. Conan is a very athletic line-up forward as well. Tyburn, I think if you're picking Klein in your row, you've got to pick taller back rows behind him, because you need spring, you need to get off the ground. Yeah. Klein's just a heavy man, very hard to lift, very hard to get off the ground. So I think it'll be Henderson and Ryan and Byrne on the bench for Scotland personally, but that will ease the pressure on Best if he has more options. So if you do go for that, to go back to the back row, if you go Mahoney, Van der Fleer, and Conan, they're all options. You can lift all of those. They're all tall lifters. You can get them up off the ground. So there's a lot of play with these selections.
Okay. One other point to touch on. I think people are vaguely aware of this, but it's come up in the last couple of days. It's typhoon season over in that part of the world. Flights have been delayed. Everybody's going to get there, I'm sure, on time.
Yeah.
There is an issue whereby if games can't go ahead due to inclement weather, which is a possibility, I don't know how big a possibility, but the solution that World Rugby have come up with is the game will not go ahead and will be chalked up as a draw.
Yeah.
Now, for the integrity of the competition, this would be disastrous.
Yes. I do think that if the forecast is really, really bad, they will endeavour to move the game in order to avoid that scenario.
Yeah.
And if it's a knockout game, it will be refixed.
Yeah.
But for a pool game, so Ireland-Russia is the example people keep coming at, like, that's definitely not going to be a nil-all game.
Yeah.
But if that is, I mean, if Ireland do lose one of their first two games and they need results against Russia and Samoa and they end up with nil-all and go out of the World Cup, or if Scotland, or if anyone does really, it doesn't really matter who, it'd be an unbelievable injustice, even for players from other countries who might be losing 50-0 no matter what, even to be denied the chance to play in a World Cup. But it is the reality of holding a tournament in this part of the world at this time of year. I mean, we're seeing a World Cup in Qatar in a couple of years' time. We're seeing a World Athletics competition in Doha. I mean, the globalisation of sport needs to take cognizance of the seasons are different in different parts of the world. It is the early part of the tournament, as far as I know. I think it does become more benign as the autumn goes on. Like, the other problem, I think within 12, 15 hours of that typhoon finishing, it's gone back to 36 degrees and massive humidity in Tokyo. It's going to be really unpleasant. And I think at the first pool game against Scotland will be played in very humid conditions. The fourth pool game against Samoa and Fukuoka will be a much drier heat. It won't even be as hot because it's just getting into their autumn. So there is things that maybe, like, I don't know much about Japan. I'm looking forward to seeing it. But I think there's things we're going to appreciate about the Japanese climate over the next couple of weeks that we didn't really, however, really realise. I mean, the Olympics is there next year, and there's going to be some pretty interesting conditions for the athletes over there.
Like you were saying, potentially the marathon might start over there at 5 a.m.
So I believe, so I was told on Friday. So I think it's 3 a.m. in Doha, I'd heard. But like, crazy stuff like that. I mean, there is a case for moving these things at different times of the year, but the rugby calendar is so awkward as it is. I mean, I think this probably should be in later autumn or early spring to try and make it the most benign. But that's part of the challenge. It's the first properly neutral World Cup, because Japan, for all that they might take a scalp, are not really contenders. Mm-hmm. Everyone going over there is in a bit of an unusual situation. Mm-hmm. And maybe Ireland going over there in 2017 may prove to be a bit of a bonus. They didn't go there by accident.
Yeah. Yokohama, 22nd of September, Ireland's first game against Scotland. Where are they based? Where are you spending most of your time?
They're moving at all. So they're staying in Chiba to start off with, which I think Ireland stayed in 2002. And by all reports of my colleagues who were on the beat at that time, isn't the most exciting place in the world. We're there, I think, until Tuesday. And then we go to Yokohama. And then basically we follow the games. So it's Yokohama, Kobe, then Hamamatsu. I mean, I'm naming places. I don't know anything about them. I'm really looking forward to seeing them. But
pronunciation's abysmal.
Yeah, I know. Tell you about it. So yeah, Hamamatsu, Kobe, down to Fukuoka, hopefully up to Tokyo for a quarterfinal, and then Tokyo all the way through for a semifinal and final.
It is Tokyo all the way through then?
Well, the games are in Yokohama, but I think the teams are going to be based in Tokyo. So the way our job works, you basically follow the team. So last time I spent a week in Burton on Trent, which is right beside Branston, which is the home of Branston Pickle, but very little is made of it. So these are the things you find out at World Cups and places you'll probably never go back to. Three weeks in Cardiff the last time was enough for anyone.
I think Tokyo trumps that.
Yeah, it should be a bit more interesting.
Good stuff. I should, by the way, before we go, tell you about our competition. In preparation for Japan, Vodafone are giving us some amazing prizes over the next few weeks. Tonight, you can win a jersey and a signed picture of the Ireland team to be in the running. Just identify our mystery voice who gave his thoughts on the body language between Boris and Leo this afternoon.
I just think it's based on love. There's a lack of love there between the two of them.
Text your name and answer, 53106. I'm sure you know who that is.
I just think it's based on love. There's a lack of love there between the two of them.
53106 for 30 cents, and you could win that jersey and that signed picture of the team. It's all thanks to Vodafone, team of us, everyone in. Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent. Safe travels.
Thanks, Joe.
Enjoy it. Good luck.
Cheers.
That's done.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.